Welcome to the CCHA show. Another week, last week of the regular season. Joining me today, Brian Schultz, Tim Rapley. Brian, first of all, I know you're going to be heading down to the Twin Cities this weekend, but thanks for coming on.
You bet.
And then Tim, our regular now here on the show, working with Flo and covering the CCHA for us there. Thanks for taking a few minutes today to talk about the playoffs and what we could be seeing here this weekend.
Yeah, McNaughton Cup is in play. It's pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting stuff. We'll start with what happened last weekend. And we'll start with what Brian was on hand for. Bemidji State with a big split of sorts with Minnesota State, really opening the door for Tech to make it a more interesting weekend. I guess it was always going to be at least something to play for. But Minnesota State winning on the first night 4-1. It was a closer game than that for the most part, with the Mavs kind of pulling away. And then the second night, very tight game. Beavers winning 2-1 in OT, and of course, it was kind of loafed again, getting the game-winning goal. Brian, what was your overall thoughts on that weekend?
Minnesota State was certainly the better team on Friday. They just managed the game so darn well. And Tom Ceritori, coach of the Beavers, afterwards said, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot we could have done against the Mavs on Friday night. Saturday night, a completely different game. Bemidji State managed things a lot better, managed the puck a lot better. Of all the goals that were scored on Friday, I believe three of them were on turnovers in the D zone or right outside the defensive blue line. So mistakes certainly cost BSU on Friday, but Saturday both teams played really, really well. And then Kyle Loft in overtime, you can't write up that script. Back in mid-December in Mankato, he won that first game of that series in overtime with a winner. Then he does it again. He's got four goals on the season, half of them overtime winners against his hometown team. Can't write that script.
Absolutely not. No, I was there for the one in Mankato as well. And then, you talk about the turnovers there. I mean, a guy like Elias Rosen's not going to make that play most of the time, right? That he kind of gives the puck away up the middle. And just uncharacteristic, seemingly, from Bemidji. Tim, did you have a chance to watch any of that series? I'm sure you had your eye on it a little bit.
I did. And that was the game that, Tech coach Joe Sean couldn't stop watching and was really into and knows that those are two of the premier teams. Fighting for every inch of space out there. It's a real grind. It looked like playoff hockey, which I guess it was. Is that your opinion, Brian?
Absolutely. When Bemidji was at Bowling Green, maybe 2 months ago, it felt like the playoffs. When Tech was in Bemidji a few weeks after that, it felt like the playoffs. Any game, Bemidji State and Minnesota State Mankato has that feel because those two teams know each other so darn well. The coaches know each other so darn well. It just feels that way. And, Saturday, the game BSU won in overtime, it just doesn't have any more of a playoff feel than that thing did.
Yeah, and we're going to see more of that, obviously, this weekend as we get into what's going on in this coming weekend. Do you want to get to another series from last week? And what we've found, Tim, to be the most goals by a new CCHA team in a weekend, Northern putting up 17 in a series with Ferris, 17-5 with the goals, 9-2 game one on Friday, and then 8-3 on Saturday. It seemed a little bit odd just watching it, just the way that the Northern was scoring from all different angles and things, but I'm sure not what Ferris wanted, but a little bit of a coming out party maybe, Tim, for Northern there.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Talk about goals. Now, this was the game that Sean said he just couldn't watch. It was like triple X as far as not enough defense is played. It's that wide sheet and goals are just popping in all over the place. Giesbrecht, who was a very hot goalie going into that series, got torched for most of those goals. His save percentage, I think, lost about 20 points on that weekend. And, it's a hot team at the right time, but it's not playoff hockey. It was more like a shinny in summer league.
Yeah, stark contrast. Brian, I'm sure you didn't get a chance to watch too much of it live, but you got maybe a glimpse of what was going on from what you saw afterwards. Well,
my color commentator throughout Friday, just every 5 minutes or so, would ask, how many more goals have been scored? And I'd bring up the live score and I'd tell him, he's like, what is going on over there? You know, just further proof that you have no clue what is going to happen when a college hockey game starts. I mean, Ferris State had been playing really, really well as of late. Northern was a team that, you know, you had a lot of question marks as of late, and 17 goals in a weekend is just absurd.
Yeah, you saw Andre Gantus break out a bit there with the scoring. He's usually an assist guy. Joey Larson continues his push, and then we can talk about it after we get through this weekend, but someone's going to be left out of the all-rookie team forward group, and it's going to be interesting to see who that might be. Joey making a push for it not to be him there with his rookie of the week, a four-point weekend there. And then Simon Kjellberg was also the defenseman of the week, putting in 4 points himself, or 3 points. For the other series, we had a split, both games going 2-1. First one went to the Lakers over St. Thomas on Friday, and then the Tommies come back with Trevor Zins picking up his first goal of the year. I think Tim, maybe you mentioned it, that Zins, or no, someone, I saw online somewhere that Zins, both of his goals, he scored two game-winning goals against Lake Superior State the last 2 years. So he's found someone to pick on a little bit there. But tight games, good goaltending, and we've seen the Lakers now pick up some points and, you know, a number of weekends now outside of the Mankato weekend where they were swept. What do you think, Tim?
Yes, they are not going to be a fun team to play against, though St. Thomas is probably the most a pain in the butt to play against St. Thomas. And so those two teams, I think that would be predictable, you know, a low scoring split.
It was Ryan Stieg who made that comment, of course, covering the Tommies locally. Oh, yeah. So Trevor Zins picking his spots against the Lakers there. Brian, any thoughts on those two teams just coming out of that split, maybe a predictable split there?
Well, as much talent as Lake State had returning, their poor record in the first probably two thirds of the season was the surprise. So you kind of figured that, you know, if they ever did figure it out, they'd be a tough outcome to playoffs. But St. Thomas, you know, from year one to year two with their roster makeover, with their production makeover, it is a completely different team than a year ago. It too is a team that I don't know that anybody wants to play starting next week.
And the Lakers are the only team locked in right now to the eighth spot. Bowling Green is probably going to finish third. Everything else is up in the air. And we're going to take a quick break and talk about some of those scenarios here with Brian and Tim here on the CCHA show.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Banks it towards the goalie. Score.
Kale McCarr.
He scores!
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious me!
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, joining me now on the CCHA show is Suzanne Sandregret, the athletic director at Michigan Tech for almost two decades now. And Suzanne, I want to thank you for taking a few minutes to talk some Huskies hockey and about what you guys have going on up in the UP.
Yeah, happy to join you. Thanks for inviting me.
So just, you know, trying to get a little bit familiar with your background. I know you grew up in Houghton and have been kind of really around the program your whole life. Is that the case? And what are your earliest memories, I guess, of athletics and primarily hockey at Tech?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the area. I graduated from the local high school, and then I attended Michigan Tech. And right out of graduation, I started working in the athletic department at Michigan Tech. So over that course of time, my career has taken me from the equipment room to the athletic director position with several stops in between. But really have enjoyed my time here. I think Michigan Tech is in my blood. I'm a graduate, grew up watching the Huskies play in all the sports and a lot surrounding hockey. Obviously, I come from a really hockey oriented family, and just being able to be a part of it as the athletic director for this long has really it was a goal and a dream. And to say that I've already been in the AD role for 18 years is pretty crazy, 18 or 19 years. And just couldn't ask for a better group of people, better group of student athletes to work with and work for.
That's great. And I'm going to get into a little bit of what the difference is coming from a similar school where I went and working with those athletes as well. We have a few things in common, but right off the bat, I want to ask you, you know, what makes the athletic department for you different from other places you've traveled around as far as the student athletes and the staff that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think one is just Michigan Tech in general has such an academic rigor, and our coaches really are committed to recruiting student athletes that meet that academic profile. And because of that, I have such great experiences where maybe not some of the challenges that other ADs might have. We really are here for our student athletes. They really are pursuing a degree specific to hockey. We hope that they achieve their hopes and dreams to play in the NHL and to play professionally. But if that doesn't work, we know that they have a really great degree to fall back on. And that's something I'm really proud of. I think our entire staff, the culture in our department, is that we're going to support the whole student athlete and do everything we can to develop their hockey skills and athletic skills, but we're also going to give them the support academically to achieve success and graduate from Michigan Tech.
And there's a little bit of the D2 aspect of it. There's a lot of multi-divisional in this CCHA, and you're also the GLIC. Are those schools kind of similar-minded in that regard, do you think?
I'm not really sure. I just really focus on Michigan Tech's perspective with it. We have approximately 400 student athletes that are between Division I and II, and they carry a 3.6 GPA, 3.57 GPA, which we're really proud of. And actually, our graduation rate is 94%, which was one of the top in the country for Division II, and it carries over into the hockey graduation rate as well.
Very cool. I saw you're also in charge of the outdoor adventure program. I just want to know what that is.
Yeah. So, you know, being in Houghton, Michigan, we are certainly a rural area. Michigan Tech and Houghton, Michigan really aren't on the way. It's not on the way to anywhere. When you pick Michigan Tech and Houghton and the Copper Country as a destination, and we really embrace the outdoors. I'm not afraid to say that, you know, Michigan Tech may not be for everybody. You really have to be able to embrace the outdoors, embrace the four seasons. And so a lot of our students and our student athletes really choose Michigan Tech, not just for the academic experience, but for that outdoor experience. We have a lot of students that really want to be mountain biking, skiing, camping, and they choose Michigan Tech because of the ability to have that outdoor experience. So the outdoor adventure program is really a department that provides the resources to our students and even some community members that they can participate by renting or gaining free access to kayaks, bikes, snowshoes, skis. We have a lot of trail systems that they can participate. And then we also offer training on how to properly kayak, how to rock climb, how to do all those things that our students really are interested in. So outdoor adventure program kind of coincides with the recreation part of my job. And we really have invested in it over time. We have an outdoor adventure program hub that is up at the trail system. So that's where all the bikes are, the skis are, the snowshoes are. And then we have a hub down on the waterfront where we keep our kayaks, canoes, and paddle boards and those types of things.
Cool. I've seen things like that are more of a club and student run, but this seems like a little more advanced than that. So that's pretty awesome for you guys.
Yeah, we do have full-time employees in the area. And then they do offer, like I said, a lot of clinics and some events like over Winter Carnival. They have a glow shoe where they're out in the, they go snowshoeing at night with glow sticks and candlelit and things like that. So pretty unique, embracing the outdoors for certain.
Absolutely. As someone who worked at RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, for 15 years, I'm very familiar with the type of student athlete you guys get. I'm wondering what your thoughts on how recruiting and finding either engineering students or business students, whatever the programs you guys have, has changed throughout your career, you think?
We have a variety of programs. I think everyone often thinks of Michigan Tech as just an engineering institution or a STEM institution, but we do have a really strong accredited College of Business. And we do have a lot in the health sciences and areas. So really recruitment has expanded, and by offering a lot of those degree programs that I think communities and students today are looking for, we are adaptive. We do offer those. And so I think that has been really helpful with our coaches in terms of being able to expand outside of just engineering disciplines. So that has helped. I do think that, as I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, that our coaches really are committed, though, to finding student athletes that have the academic background that they can be successful here. We do take risks and we do take chances on some athletes that maybe don't meet exactly the academic profile. But in those cases, we certainly give them the assistance in terms of student athlete support for their academic success, tutoring, those types of things. But yeah, we've expanded those degree offerings, and I think that's helped our coaches a lot over the last several years.
That's great. And I know one of a former player of mine, Tristan Ashbrook, transferred back home to Tech, and he's been great for you guys. So it's good to see he's able to do, you know, probably not change too much of what he was studying coming from RPI to Tech there.
Exactly. Not very often that those type of transfers are that easy.
I can imagine. You know, you guys host a number of regional events. I know that's important because the facilities are important, and the ability to host those kind of things, whether it's a regional or even national skiing stuff. How big is that for you guys to have that a little bit more national, in the eye of the whole country there?
Yeah, our outdoor recreation trail system is pretty incredible, very extensive, one of the nicest, I think, in the country in terms of the commitment we make to our Nordic ski program. It is a national championship, so it does compete against Division One and three institutions, and we do very well. We just hosted the Toyota United States Ski and Snowboard Association Nationals over January 2nd to the 7th, and we had about 400 athletes competing from around the country, around the world. A lot of international Nordic skiers actually are on a lot of U.S. university teams. And I know that we had future Olympians, you know, competing here. And we have made a huge commitment to our trail system. I think it is something that we should embrace here. It's perfect for our climate and location. And our Nordic ski program is actually very successful because of the training facilities that we have. But hosting those huge events, national exposure puts us on the national stage, just like our hockey program does.
That's awesome. No, as someone who grew up cross country skiing in high school, that is really cool to see. And I always think of what that might have been like at the next level. But my next few questions are a little bit about the fandom of Michigan Tech and how it seems to have kind of stood the test of time as far as other schools maybe struggling to get kids into the building. But you guys seem to have no problem with that. What do you think you can attribute that to? Just your overall attendance numbers, but also, you know, coming back from COVID and being able to fill McGinnis with kids and community members.
Yeah, we're really fortunate. Our McGinnis Student Ice Arena, I think, you know, arguably, and at least in my opinion, is one of the best college hockey venues, I think, in the country, not just because of our sight lines and because of our arena, but because of our community support and student support. I think, you know, students, our student attendance has been outstanding this year. Our pep band is always a huge draw. And really engaged in the game experience, as is our student group, the Mitch's Misfits. And they really are very loyal fans. I think COVID really, you know, we have students that have never got, because of COVID, for 2 years, really didn't get that athletic experience and being in that environment. So they're coming in droves just to be a part of it, because it is something new. It helps that we're successful. We have really exciting games, I think, that have kept them very much entertained. And just that whole experience and that whole environment is something that students want to be a part of. Our line waiting to get into the facility, snakes down upstairs, down hallways, right past my office, starting at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game. So it has been just the coolest thing to see them all in their jerseys, carrying the flags for where all of our student athletes or hockey athletes come from, and really they're engaged and they're really hockey knowledgeable. They understand the game, they know the game, and I think the Copper Country and Houghton, Michigan, and Michigan Tech You know, we may not be the state of hockey like Minnesota, but I think it's very transferable how people view hockey in the state of Minnesota to how they, that our local people and our students view hockey here. You know, there's outdoor rinks, you know, everywhere. Our community is really engaged with it. And it clearly fits our climate and location with, you know, outdoor winter sports.
No, that's great. And I just wanted to piggyback on top of that a little bit. And just for people who aren't familiar, what, just as briefly as you can, I guess, what is Carnival and what does it mean for the campus? And obviously it's centered around a hockey series, but also there's all kinds of other events going on.
Yeah, Winter Carnival is conducted early February every year. It's actually coincided with our 100 year celebration of hockey was also our 100th year celebration of Winter Carnival. So it goes back a long way, and basically it just started out embracing the winter and embracing the snow. And the snow sculptures are unbelievable. They're many stories high, lots of scaffolding that our student body will climb upon and sculpt out and build these massive snow structures and statues based on the theme for that year. Our Winter Carnival is surrounded with an all-nighter where those statues are being finalized. Campus is just rocking with just students, community, all out enjoying, embracing the outdoors. Lots of food venues, lots of entertainment going on inside and outside. But really, it's an opportunity for us to embrace winter and celebrate winter. And then the conclusion of that is a big part of that is the hockey series on Friday and Saturday. And then that follows by a torchlight parade and fireworks at our ski hill. So a lot of students and their a lot of alumni come back, a lot of families, parents come back to celebrate it with their son or daughter who are students here. But those are typically and have been, you know, they're sellout hockey events. The vibe, the energy is really pretty incredible. But great events that just celebrates who we are.
That's awesome. And you mentioned it a little bit ago, but just like the success that the team is having this year, on top of all that, has to be a little bit, you know, it's obviously a bit of a driving force too when it comes to, you know, getting kids to come out. And it's better when you're fighting for the McNaughton Cup again. But what has this season been like for you as an athletic director, watching this team succeed when maybe early in the season, people didn't know what to expect. Maybe you didn't know what to expect from this group you had.
Yeah, I think it's hard in this environment with the transfer portal, with how many student athletes we had graduate last year that really had a lot of minutes. And really our season was going to be an unknown because, you know, there was a lot of inexperienced players that were playing. And I think Coach Sean and his staff did a great job developing them, coaching them, putting together great game plans. And I think our student athletes really responded to that opportunity that they finally, you know, get to represent the Huskies on a regular basis and prove maybe the polls wrong and prove what people thought. You know, in my career as athletic director, it's kind of one of these things where every season, no matter what sport it is, I'm very nervous in the beginning of any season, like, how many games are we going to win? We just got to get some wins under our belt and get momentum. And then we start getting those wins. And then at some point, it's like a tipping point where my nervous energy isn't about, are we going to win? It's like, we need to keep winning because I want to win a national championship. So there's some point where it's like, you know, the nervousness is about winning any games at all to winning it all. Yeah. I'm not sure where that tipping point happens. So I'm basically nervous for every game and every contest that we have in our department, because I want our student athletes and those coaches and our community and students to be rewarded with you know, a championship. The start of the season, I think everyone is a little bit on pins and needles, like, where is hockey going to land? But pretty happy that we're at 21 wins and counting, and really, really proud of the team and the student athletes and the coaches.
That's definitely a good way to look at it there. And for you guys, it's come down to this last weekend, which is a little bit unique with Minnesota State, and 2 points back are the Huskies with 2 games to play. I know you'll be watching intently from wherever you are here, but what are you most excited about for your group this weekend, I guess?
Well, I don't think you could write a better script. Maybe if we were completely tied going into this final series, but this, you don't get an opportunity like this very often where it comes down to the last game and both teams control their destiny. So yeah, excited for just the energy. I know Mankato's, I think, in a sold out situation. They're playing for a lot, but so are we. And it should be really entertaining, and that's what I hope for. And I hope we come out with a couple of W's.
All right, back with Brian Schultz, Tim Rapley, and guys that couldn't really have asked for too much more as folks who work within the CCHA and the teams respectively. Tim obviously covers the whole league, but Brian, the radio play-by-play for Bemidji State, and the Beavers are looking to try and lock up home ice this weekend. Before we get to the matchup, just the scenario they're in, right? They're 3 points up on both Northern and Ferris. If they get 4 points, if they get a regulation win and anything else, as far as points goes, they've locked up that fourth spot. Have you talked to Coach Serratore? I mean, I know he had his pre weekend talk, and obviously after post game, what are his thoughts, and what do you think coming into another important weekend for the Beavers?
Well, Bemidji State has been, the last handful of years, a perennial home ice team. So that is goal number one. He said yesterday, earlier this week in his press conference, because we don't set many goals. We don't talk a lot about, big picture type stuff when the season starts, because we do talk about that. Every year we want to be a home ice team, because the rest of the stuff's going to take care of itself if you're a home ice team. You can play for a championship if you're perennially going to be top half. Let's not kid ourselves, because he was giving away 8 games this year. From the 58-minute mark to the 60-minute mark, 8 different times it's gone from a BSU win to a tie or a tie to a loss. You win 3/4 of those, you're easily in home ice playoff positioning right now. So BSU knows that they've given some away throughout the course of the year. You got to pay the penalty for it, and that means you got to play good this weekend.
What do you think, Tim, on just that home ice? What, we can talk about any of those teams that are in contention for home ice still.
Well, they talk about teams with a bullet, headed pointed north. Northern, ever since they won that little Capo Cup, seems like they've gotten a big burden off their shoulders, and they're flying out there. So they're the team that's really hungry to catch Bemidji. And if Bemidji stubs their toe, particularly on Friday night, then Northern may seize on it. So I think that's fun stuff. But again, I'm all about staying around at home, because I want to watch the McNaughton Cup on the ice this weekend, and that's a great series head to head. It's March Madness has come to February, so we like that.
Yep, that series that Tim is referring to, Minnesota State is hosting Michigan Tech. They're 2 points apart in the standings, 49 and 47 respectively, for the Mavericks, who are trying to win their sixth in a row. The championship, including going back to the WCHA, Tech is looking for their first at least share since 15-16, and their first outright since, I think, 1975, if I'm not mistaken. It's definitely in the mid to late 70s. I'll find that before the show's over, but it's been a while for the Huskies since they've had the McNaughton Cup in their possession, and you got to think that if you told them right now they could have at least a share of it, they'd be happy. But obviously, going into the weekend with a chance to win it all, that's got to be the goal. What do you think? What do you think, Brian?
The thing that intrigues me the most out of this series is both of these team splits at home and on the road. To talk to Minnesota State people last week, they're like, "Man, we have not been good at all at home." Well, 9-6-0 is still okay at home, but they're 11-5-1 on the road, so. Numbers wise, they've gotten the job done more on the road than they have at home this year. You look at Michigan Tech, their road record, they're 11-4-1, which is an unbelievable road record. They're 8-3-3 at home. So, can Michigan Tech, in one of the most hostile places in this league, keep the ole, ole, ole song from being played? If they can do that, they deserve this championship.
What do you think, Tim?
I just want someone to explain to me, if they share the championship, do they take turns,
yes,
spinning around the rink, holding the cup?
that's been worked out. And then folks will find out if that occurs on Saturday. But yes, both teams would get the championship gear and the photo with the cup, 1975-76, that was close. It was the last outright championship, part of the WCHA, of course, for Michigan Tech. They did share with Mankato back in 15-16, but they certainly weren't finishing the year playing against each other. Last year it was, coincidentally enough, Bemidji who Mankato clinched against, both the Mankinaton and, of course, the infamous a little bit Mason Cup championship game, which we won't get into for another couple of weeks here. But no, it's definitely going to be interesting how this weekend goes down. And for folks who are still a little bit unclear, on Friday, Mankato can clinch with a regulation win or an overtime win. Any other result would push the push the Mankinaton Cup championship to Saturday in a clear outright sense. They can Minnesota State can clinch a share of the title with an overtime loss.
Perry,
yes,
can you give us a little insight? Are you creating two sets of merchandise for caps and t-shirts to hand out afterward?
Well, I can give you insight to the fact that they will be available for each team fans as soon as it's clinched. But for the teams, they're going to be wearing generic Mankinaton Cup gear. They are not. We're not the NBA. We're not sending anything off to a foreign country as incorrect championship gear. No, we're not quite there. But no, they are prepared. It should be the gear should be there today. We're talking about Wednesday here. This should be out by at least tomorrow. Guys, for award stuff, I know we're not going to go through everything, but I did want to talk about the rookie stuff because I know Tim's been monitoring it for his articles. Brian's seen Leighton Road all year. You have Joey Larson. You have Kyle Kukkonen. You have Joe Earnesy in St. Thomas. Benny Halas, there's a number of these kids who have had great rookie years. You can even look nationally in the Fantilli from Michigan, but sticking with the CCHA, you know, Tim, what have you seen from the group as a whole? And we can ask Brian, who's seen Leighton Road on a weekly basis in person.
Well, in terms of the eye test, what Leighton Road does with his combination of skills, the shooting and the skating, it makes you think that, you know, there's some ideal hockey player coming out of the Twin Cities. But when you look at the stats and the total amount of goals scored, you know, Kukkonen's got 14, Earnesy's got 14. When I started talking about, hey, here's a rookie of the year race, then folks in Minnesota are talking about, hey, don't forget about Christian Fitzgerald with the
Fitzgerald, right, yeah.
Right. So, yes, it's going to be very crowded on that all-rookie team. I've seen sometimes they put four forwards on an All-American team occasionally when there's four real good candidates. But let me see. One, two, three, four. You got five. I don't think you can put five forwards on that All-Rookie team. So I'd be interested to hear another opinion on this. Brian, who do you like on that All-Rookie team?
Well, again, just because I've seen him every single night, Leighton Road would probably be leaning towards my favorite. And the thing about him is you're right. He can do just about everything. His skating is unbelievable. He's incredibly strong. He has been as consistent of a rookie as I've seen at Bemidji State. Going back to the Matt Reed days, you know, back at the end of the CHA and the early stages of BSU into the WCHA, he's outscored Matt Reed as a freshman. Leighton Road, again, he's just been so consistent. Fitzgerald at Minnesota State, you mentioned. He had two goals last weekend. Took the game over at a point on Friday. All of these guys are certainly deserving of the conversation. Now, the question is, you know, who's going to have the coaches, you know, who's going to be high up on the coaches' ballots? Hard telling. And yeah, you can't vote for your own guy. So, you know, who's going to steal votes from somebody else? Because there are certainly, you know, more deserving guys than are going to be on that final team.
That's absolutely right. And so, yeah, it's obviously going to come down to the voting. It looks like Austin Swankler is going to end up with the most points. He's 6 points up on David Cilia with just 1 weekend to play as far as regular season goes. Obviously, all all points count in college hockey all the way through postseason play there. We kind of expected it was going to be a tight race. David Cilley does have three more goals than Schwenkler, 20-17. Nathan Burke for the Falcons is 16. Mac Byers is 15 for St. Thomas. And then you have Kukin and Ernesty and with 14. Kind of an open race when the season started, Tim, as far as the goal scoring and the point scoring here. But anybody stand out for you as far as overall just a great season offensively?
Well, you know, at the Frozen Four, Cilley made some noise with an incredible snipe, and he sort of picked it up from there. If you ask anyone outside of Mankato or in the Mankato area, they're saying Cilley's the guy. I think Schwenkler's had a really good year. I mean, I'm not saying anything new, but, you know, he's tough and he scores in the clutch times when they really need it. So both those guys are extraordinary players. But, you know, I still want to talk about Leighton Rode and his playmaking ability. You know, I've seen him, you know, making these, you know, really, you know, Brian's seen it more than me, but just the ability to make the right passes, the hockey sense the guy has. You know, he's kind of my favorite player in this league, favorite skater anyway.
His goal that he scored last Friday, BSU's only goal, was a turnover right outside of Mankato's blue line. He had just come off the bench, so he'd been on the ice for, you know, a couple of seconds. Boom, the puck's on his stick. He takes about two strides in a half a second, and you blink your eyes, and boom, the thing's in the back of the net. He's got a quick shot, good hockey sense, like you mentioned. He can anticipate that play and make a play because of it. You know, getting back to the Schwenkler-Cilley comparisons, what did Schwenkler end up? 19 straight? Was that
his? Yep, 19 was the consecutive scoring, yep.
It's dang hard to score in college hockey right now.
Really is.
Scoring 19 straight games?
Yeah.
That to me takes the cake.
And then the other award I wanted to talk about was a national one. Because it seems just about that Blake Pietola has done everything he's needed to as far as the CCHA is concerned. But between he, Yaniv Peretz of Quinnipiac, and then, of course, the reigning Richter Award winner from Northeastern, Devin Levi, just, you know, not seeing them on a regular basis, any of those guys, but just, you know, knowing what Blake has meant to TAC. We'll start with Brian this time. Just, you know, what do you think his odds are of at least making the being a finalist for that Richter Award?
I have no problems with his next statement. Without Blake Pietola, Michigan Tech is not playing for a Mignon Cup this weekend. He, to me, has been their most valuable player. When Tech was here a few weeks ago in Bemidji, Tom Ceratori said it afterwards. He goes, "We just played the best goalie in the country." BSU happened to have a fundraiser going on that weekend and a teddy bear toss night. I'm like, why would you pick that guy when you've got to score a goal to throw teddy bears onto the ice? Why do you pick that guy? He's been that dang good. My only concern for him is Levi won it last year. He's had a very, very solid year again. You know, is he going to get a two-time vote just from people who aren't maybe paying attention to the big picture? But certainly Blake Pietola has had a phenomenal year.
Yeah, you have Blake on the, as far as like the, where the teams are at. You got Quinnipiac, who's a top one or two receiving votes, or right behind Minnesota for the national team. You have Blake in the, you know, creeping into the top 10 as far as Tech's concerned. And then Northeastern's really kind of fallen off, but Levi's kind of brought them back later on in this year. So, Tim, what do you see from those three and where Blake fits in?
Well, the Beanpot is one of the biggest, probably the biggest tournament of the regular season. The biggest spotlight is shining, and people are just raving about Devin Levi. He's better than he was last year. He's carrying the team. There's not a lot of defense on Northeastern. I was just back east, and that's just the talk of college hockey back east, what Devin Levi is doing. So I feel bad that maybe it's going to cost our guy the Richter Award, but I believe he's the most valuable player in this league based on what I've seen. He's really, you know, and it's what's got them in the pairwise ranking. Those wins, he carried the team in Alaska in October, and he carried the team over Boston University out in Arizona, and so that's where they get all those pairwise points, you know, on the back of Blake Pietola. So I like him as the most valuable player. I don't know what they call it in this league, but he's the guy that's carried the load for Tech.
Yeah, he could be, you know, he'd potentially be the goalie and the player of the year in the CCHA. Looking at the pairwise, just before we get into next weekend and what's or this coming up here, you have Tech at 11, Minnesota State at 12. Those are, I mean, I want to say they're comfortably out of the bubble because they're still on the bubble, right? As far as what could potentially happen in the next couple of weeks here with them playing each other doesn't help a ton as far as that goes. But if you said at the beginning of the year that the league would have two teams in those positions and have a chance to get two teams in, you'd have to be pretty happy. At some point, maybe you'd like to get a third, but this the way the season's gone with how the team is have gone played outside of the league in non-conference, this is probably a best case scenario. We think, Tim.
Hey, you know, Northern gets on a run, Bemidji gets on a run. You get three teams in the tournament. That's Shangri-La for you, isn't it, Perry?
Yeah, you almost need that to be the only upset in that scenario, right? As far as the teams outside the top 16. Brian, what do you think about the pairwise and where the CCHA is sitting here?
You know, both Michigan Tech and Minnesota State throughout the course of the year have had their dips where you're like, oh, man, is the CCHA going to get only the auto bid in? And now for both of them, the second half to really, you know, kick things back up and like you said, not totally comfortable, but a whole lot more comfortable than they were a month ago. I think that says a lot for how well those two teams have played. Now, can both of those teams get into a position where they're safe and can maybe lose in the semifinals and still get in? Hard telling. There's just so many good teams in college hockey right now. I don't even want to predict what's going to happen this weekend, much less in 3 weeks for the championship.
All right, we're going to take one more break and be back with thoughts on this upcoming weekend here in the CCHA in just a minute. All right, joining me on the CCHA show is Bowling Green senior captain Alex Barber. Alex, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk about some Falcons hockey with me here today.
No, thanks for having me.
Alex is from Dublin, Ohio, and so didn't have to go too far to find his college hockey home. What was it like, first of all, for you, you know, growing up and Ohio, not really a hockey hotbed, but a chance for you to continue playing college hockey?
Yeah, it was cool. I've actually been coming to Bowling Green my whole life. My grandparents live here, and my dad grew up here, so I've been coming to Bowling Green hockey games pretty much my entire life. So when I was lucky enough to get an offer from Bowling Green, it was a pretty easy decision for me. And yeah, I'm just really blessed, and I'm really grateful for Bowling Green to become my second home and to be able to play college hockey here too.
That is awesome. And 173 games for you now for the Falcons and counting. You know, a lot of you guys who got that extra COVID year to come back and play and obviously chose to stay here. And that's a big deal, I think, because a lot of guys have used that to go somewhere else and maybe play a fifth year or sixth year somewhere else. What is it about Bowling Green and you and your classmates that, you know, you feel like you have unfinished business here and something you want to finish off strong here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think me and my classmates, especially the guys that have been here for 5 years, we kind of got a taste of a CCA or a WCHA championship at the time, our freshman year, and then going to the national tournament as well. And, you know, we feel like our program can be at that level. And that was kind of something that we wanted to accomplish. And we knew that having a couple of older guys and some new older guys coming in as well is going to give us a good chance to accomplish that. So I think really what it comes down to is everything you need is here. We don't really have all the bells and whistles that maybe a bigger program has, but whatever you need, Bowling Green can help you accomplish that. And I think we just kind of wanted to repay the program and give it another go this year.
That's really great. And it's good for college hockey in general. I'm sure a lot of people outside the program look at that as a positive for you guys and Coach Agner as well. And with all the legacies, of course, some of the younger guys coming in as well, that you guys have on the team. How cool is that to have those, you know, all those sons of former players and sons of the coach even on the team?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They have, like you said, a legacy here, but they came in and I think they kind of want to make their own legacy here. They didn't come in all cocky or anything like that. They're real, real humble kids and they go to work every day. So it's nice. And I'm really excited to see what they accomplish in the future.
know, the Emersons and the Blakes and the Eigners of the world there coming in and trying to make their own mark. That's pretty cool. I saw you were mic'd up earlier this year. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was cool. I think our media guy was telling me I was the first one in college hockey to do it in a game, and it was a lot of fun. I'm not sure how much content he could actually use, but yeah, I think the video was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. It was cool for me to send to my family and show my friends that didn't necessarily grow up playing hockey, kind of see what the in game is like. And yeah, it was a fun little behind the scenes. I enjoyed it a lot.
Did you? It's probably a good thing. Did you ever forget that you had it on when you were in the heat of the battle there?
Yeah, I honestly didn't even notice it at all. I think maybe once or twice I would say something and I'd be like, oh crap, I got this thing on my back. And our media guys listened to me the whole time, but
yeah,
it was fun. I enjoyed it. And we got some good content out of it too.
Along those same lines, it seems like you guys have one of the better marketing groups in all of college hockey with your Jurassic Park night, Star Wars. I know you have, with the Olympic skaters that you guys had as an alum there, and obviously you're with today being the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, you have a couple of guys from that 80 Olympic team. Just as a player, you kind of see that stuff, and some of it's fun, some of your teammates, and you get to act a little bit in some of these ads. What's it like having that kind of exposure in that kind of interesting way to try to get fans to come out?
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of a way to get a little bit away from hockey too, just kind of trying to get our fans to come out, and it gives some of the boys a chance to just kind of lay back and have some fun and maybe just do something you wouldn't normally do on a regular day. And trying to get our fans to come out, obviously they don't really need any extra push to come to games, but yeah, it's cool having all these little things like the Jurassic Park night. And I think we're giving t-shirts out on Friday this weekend for Scooter's cooler jump. And yeah, it's cool. I mean, they do a great job here, and it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of Scooter, did you realize how good of an actor he was? I know he's playing the Emperor and for the Star Wars video and everything.
Nothing about that guy surprises me anymore. I can't put restrictions on that guy. He keeps surprising me. So I was not shocked at how good of an actor he was.
That kind of that diamond cutter celebration that he does is kind of come a little bit a ways here. I know it's got some national acclaim after you guys, I think, won three series in a row there, where it kind of got to a really big deal. Obviously, you had the little Blake who came in and got to do it with him in the locker room. What does that mean for you as a player to have obviously a longtime equipment manager there, and having that addition just to the program as well?
Yeah, it's awesome. Obviously, he's been there for a long time, and he works super hard for us, and he gives us whatever we need whenever we need it. And sometimes he doesn't quite get the recognition that he deserves. So it's cool to have for him to have his little thing after we sweep a weekend. And, you know, nobody cares more about Bowling Green hockey than Scoot does. So it's cool to see all the guys get super excited for him to do that after we sweep.
You guys were off last weekend. What did you guys use that time to maybe take a weekend off from grueling hockey and maybe a chance to rest up? It's not a terrible time to have the break, but what did you guys try to accomplish with the weekend off?
Yeah, I think we just kind of tried to reset. We've had some injuries throughout this year. I think guys really use the time to catch up on rest and start feeling better. It's hockey is a grueling season. It's a long season, and this came at a good time for us. So hopefully we get a little replenished and we're feeling more energetic coming into playoffs.
You guys were able to clinch home ice while you were not playing, which is kind of cool. How important is it at the beginning of the year, looking at the season and saying, you get to that point where you're either third or fourth, probably third, depending on how the weekend goes, but just having that in the bag that you guys will be playing back at the slate again in the postseason.
Yeah, it definitely eases our minds a little bit. That's one of our goals coming into the year is to play a home series in front of our fans, and we haven't been able to accomplish that the last couple of years. But we're coming into this weekend wanting 6 points, but it's definitely nice knowing that we have home ice locked up.
And then for, you know, for your group and, you know, you have Northern, obviously you saw what Northern was able to do last weekend, scoring all those goals. But coming into your building, you know, how confident are you guys coming off of your break here and going into the last regular season weekend here, knowing that you're going to be home again, as we talked about?
Yeah, we're a very confident group. I think we feel that we can beat anyone when they come into our rink, and we just have to make sure we play our way, and we can't get caught up in anything going on around us. And we got to use the fans' energy to our advantage and not get pushed over that line because of the energy. So I think we're feeling good. We're ready to go. I think we're excited to get back there and play against someone else other than ourselves. But yeah, so we're excited.
All right, back for a final time with Brian and Tim. Looking ahead to the final weekend, we have all eight teams back in action. We had a couple of weeks where teams had to kind of catch up with games played the last 2 weeks. So only six game schedules the last 2 weekends. But finally, the whole gang is all back together here this weekend. And we'll build up to the big one for the McNaughton, starting off Lake State and Ferris State. These are teams Lake State knows exactly what's going on. They're either headed to Mankato or to Houghton next weekend, but they are at Ferris State for two, and obviously a much bigger series for Ferris State, Tim. And I know you've been to that building a number of times, trying to get into that top four and trying to get someone to come into their barn there.
Well, they've got to figure out what's going on in goal for them, right? Do you now turn it over to Stein, you know, for the stretch run? Because, Giesbrecht got hammered. You know, and they tried him again Saturday night, and suddenly he's given up another half dozen goals. You know, that's got to shake confidence. He's looking at his stats. So, you know, you had a team that was built from the goal out that is coming home and was shattered. I'm curious who's going to start Friday night. I'm guessing Stein might, Logan Stein. So they've got to pick up the pieces and do it in a hurry. They're pointing in the wrong direction at the wrong time.
Brian, I'm sure you'll have your eye on this series when you're over at the St. Thomas Ice Arena with how the Bulldogs are faring. But ultimately, we'll get to the Beavers. But if they take care of business, this shouldn't matter too much.
Yeah, you know, to me, Bob Daniels, regardless of what happens this week or next week or for the rest of the season, deserves a ton of credit for turning that thing around in pretty short order. I mean, their fan base was, you know, starting to question whether or not a guy who's been there for over two decades, it's time for him to go. And he's back into the consideration for home ice again. So what he's done over the course of the year has been great. Giesbrecht has been a big part of that. You know, can a young guy, you know, regroup and come back from last weekend? Hard telling. Something tells me Bob Daniels will figure that out in practice though this week. He's seen enough goalies over the course of his coaching career to know when a guy's got it or doesn't. To me, Lake State, though, is playing to keep some momentum going, because I think Laker fans and the Lakers and Damon Whitten think that they can go make some noise next week, regardless of if they're going to Houghton or Mankato. So to me, Lake State's the bigger question this week is, can they continue, the last month or so of good play?
That's a good point. No, I totally agree with you there, Brian. To our next series here, Bowling Green and Northern Michigan. You have Bowling Green coming off their bye week, their off week there against a Northern team that just put up 17 goals. How many goals are we going to see this weekend at the slate here, Tim?
I think they're going to keep rocking, you know, Northern Michigan. You know, Grant Pitoli always talks about, you know, even when things are going really bad in January, says it's all about how we're playing at the end of the year. You know, 2 years ago, he went on a Cinderella run to the championship, the tournament final. And they're playing well now. I like their chances to pick up more than 3 points this weekend. You know, Bowling Green's, you know, they're tough, they're physical, they score goals. They like, turning the madhouse on Mercer all fired up and, you know, pounding the glass, hitting opponents. But I think these teams know each other super well. They've played each other in a lot of playoff matchups. Northern has won a quarterfinal on that run before. They won at Bowling Green. I like them. I think they're going to be good road warriors now and in the tournament. beware of Northern. They got a bullet on them, you know, Northern, fourth place, fifth place with a bullet going forward.
Brian, what do you think about those? These two really offensively gifted teams, a lot of high scoring on both sides of the ice, but also two pretty good goalies too, in Halas and Stover.
To me, Bowling Green plays better defensively at home than what Ferris would have played defensively on the road last week. I don't see Northern Michigan coming anywhere close to 17 goals this weekend against Bowling Green. Ty Agner would...
he would not be happy with that.
Let's just say that would not be a pleasant conversation in that locker room if Bowling Green gives up anywhere close to a dozen. But can Northern Michigan go in there and get a win? Absolutely. To me, Bowling Green and Ferris are two of the tougher buildings to play in, especially for an Olympic-sized ice team, just because the game just is so much faster. Bowling Green plays that style where it's off the glass and out, and it's just like Coach Territory always calls it the Indy 500 on ice. It happens so much quicker, and I don't know if Northern can continue what they did last week playing in that building against that defensive team.
Now to the team that Brian will be calling. The Beavers are headed to St. Thomas. It was a pretty exciting series when they met in Bemidji, and now they're closing out the year needing, as we talked about, 4 points to guarantee themselves home ice. If they get a win, it's almost all but locked up there, as it'll come down to tiebreakers to be caught. But Brian, we'll go right back to you with the Beavers and St. Thomas here. We talked about how much improved the Tommies were, and they continue to show it all through the second half with wins over Tech, Minnesota State, Bowling Green. So, what are your thoughts coming in?
Like I said earlier, just a completely different team than a year ago. I've known Rico Blasi long enough to know that his teams are always going to be prepared this time of the year. You know, can Bemidji State use its veterans who have kind of been there, done that? You look at BSU, they just had senior weekend last weekend, 9 seniors, which is a tremendous amount. 2 transfers in, but 7 seniors that have been a part of this team for 4 or 5 years with Ross Armour. Can those guys go on the road and know what it takes to get it done and actually get it done? You look at the bottom side of Bemidji State's roster, they also have 7 freshmen who play a lot. Do those guys know what they're in for here this weekend? To me, that's the intriguing part, is how is Bemidji State's leadership and how's Bemidji State's youth going to respond this weekend?
Tim?
What I've noticed watching Rico Blasi's team is how tough they are. You know, just abrasive, they're truculent, they finish their checks. You know, they put an important goal scorer out, Minnesota State, with just a nasty hit. There's going to be, you know, Bemidji, no shrinking violets, right? There's a lot of toughness out there. There's a lot of size out there. This is going to be real bumper cars out there. And for me, you know, if you like physical hockey, this is going to be a very entertaining series. I'm still looking, you know, how Bemidji is getting offense after losing, you know, Eric Merton. I think, was that a tendon injury in practice? I'm not sure what it was. Maybe we can be informed, Brian. But, you know, filling that offensive void, will they have the scoring to sweep a series here? Maybe there's a 2-1, 3-2 result. Not sure who's going to be on the top end of that.
Truculent bumper cars. I like that. Eric Martin got hurt against Northern. Just fell awkwardly forward and landed on the back of a skate of a Northern player. I believe that was a Saturday night game. He had surgery the next week, and that was a tough loss for BSU. He had been probably their best 200-foot forward up to that point, and to lose a guy that, you know, has played in a lot of hockey games and is contributing that way, that was a big loss for BSU.
Yeah, there have been some injuries. You look at Sam Morton, who was off to a real hot start for Mankato. You know, just it's tough. It's tough. You know, the Techs had their run of injuries as well, having to run, you know, different players back on the blue line all year, and Coach Sean's made that work. So, I mean, it's just part of the, right? I'm sure any coach will tell you, it's just part of the season, is you're going to have guys that are banged up or that are out for the year, and you just need to that's why you have 27, you know, 28 plus guys on the roster to be able to try and fill in some of those holes. Getting to our last,
Turner always says, I don't want to talk about injuries because they happen to everybody.
That's a good,
not
that's
a bad mindset. Mentality.
Yeah. That's a good mindset. And I'm not at all surprised that Coach Cerutori has that to say about that subject. Last but not least, of course, is the McNaughton Cup series. We kind of hinted at it earlier, but it's a 2-point lead for Minnesota State looking to win another one. And for Tech, it's I'm sure as many fans as can try to get into that building. I know it's sold out for the weekend, but they're going to try and get there to see their team potentially lift the McNaughton Cup for the first time in quite some time. Tim, what are you looking for out of this series? I know you said you're going to stay home and try to watch most of this thing.
Yeah. Well, I have to put my meteorologist hat on. There's a storm of the century that's going through right now. And I guess Michigan Tech was originally going to leave on Wednesday afternoon and go to Duluth. Then they said, geez, let's push it up to Wednesday morning. They ended up leaving yesterday, Tuesday. And they got to skate in over at Ritter in the Twin Cities, and they should be pulling into Mankato now. So they're not going to let anything get in their way, anything derail them. They're very nimble. They want to make sure they're there and prepared. And, Tech and Joe Shawn they've been studying the Mankato dynasty, right? They were 100 games over 500 in that last 5-year run of theirs of McNaughton Cups. And Joe just loves watching their puck possession intensity. And that's what he mirrors this team after. So there might be a push in terms of the skaters. He likes his guy in goal. That might give them an edge, right? The goaltending edge, we talk about save percentage. You got a 928 versus what I think is now probably an 895 save percentage. Am I close?
Oh, for...
Yeah. Well, let's look at Blake Pietilas, right around 928, right?
He's at 912 now, Rancier. But the team might be lower.
Rancier at 912. Okay.
Yeah. The team's probably right, lower, well, but yeah.
Team's at 900.
Yeah, team's at 900. There you go. You weren't far off.
Okay. So, it's really, Rancier's in charge. He's up to 912, so that, that might prove to be one goal over the weekend. I like the edge and goal for Tech, and I think they can both be dominating puck possession. Look at the second period when they try and jump on the ice and keep it in the attacking zone for big swaths of time. That might determine how this thing gets won. If I got the proper odds and I was down in Vegas, I might take Tech.
Can't not endorse that. Brian, what do you see as the difference in this series?
To me, it is Michigan Tech when they score first. They are 19-4-3. When you score first that many times throughout the course of a year, and you've got a goalie as good as Blake Pietila is, to me, it's who scores first. If Minnesota State's able to score first on Friday night and get that packed building going, look out. But if Michigan Tech can play with a lead and kind of silence that crowd, and like I said earlier, keep ole, ole, ole away from being played through that PA system, I like Michigan Tech's chances.
Yeah, we saw the Bowling Green take advantage of that last time Tech was on the ice. They were able to score first very early in that Friday game and ran it to a win, although I think they did actually score first on Saturday too. Tech answered quickly. That was kind of the Kyle Kukkonen weekend. I think that's important. That's what they're able to do against BU when they were able to win the Desert Hockey Classic. They scored the first three goals in the first period, Tech did, and then held on against a very good BU team that may very well help get them into the tournament regardless of how they do in the playoffs here. But it's definitely a huge, that's a big time stat. But
there's only been seven games that Tech hasn't scored first all year. 2-4-1. I'll take the 19-4-3 when they score first.
That's exactly right. All right. Before we go, I'll give you guys a chance to plug where people can find you on. I know Brian, I know you do a little bit of writing on the site for the blog for the Beavers, and then you also obviously call every games at home and away.
BeaverRadioNetwork.com. You can listen back to previous games. You want to hear Kyle Loaf score half of his overtime game-winning goals, you can do that. Again, BeaverRadioNetwork.com.
BeaverRadioNetwork.com, Brian. Thanks. And then, Tim, where can people find where you're writing about?
I've got a Twitter handle, at T-Raps, T-E-E-R-A-P-S. I'm plugging a book or two. It's all out there. So, but I just like following that CCHA.com and seeing how this whole thing boils down. You know, it's been a lot of fun, Barry, and I'm very fond of this league, and everything's up for grabs except for eighth place.
All right, guys, thanks so much for coming on, and I'm sure I'll talk to you after this exciting weekend.
You bet.
Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the CCHA Show. For stories, scores, stats, and more, visit ccha.com.